It's Tuesday, April 9th, and it's been 164 years since the first ever known voice recording. Seeing as this is a podcast, I thought that was hundies worth mentioning today. And said recording was 20 seconds long and was of someone singing Au Clair de la Lune, a French folk song. Can't promise any French folk songs here today. But kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen, and this is what's worth talking about. It's expected TVNZ staff will today learn the fate of shows like Sunday and Fair Go. So has the broadcaster listened to staff's proposals, or was the consultation period just smoke and mirrors? Newsable understands David Seymour is set to unveil his plans to tackle truancy. Just how much could the fines for parents cost? Period poverty has fast become a massive problem in Gaza that one Kiwi company is hoping to help alleviate, and the scientists planning to bring back mammoths. All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
Today could be the day that staff working in TVNZ's news and current affairs programs learn their fate. A document obtained by Stuff last month gave yesterday, the 8th of April, as the deadline for the state-funded broadcaster to confirm a decision on the proposed structure change. So that news could be presented to staff as soon as this morning. The show's expected to be affected. One news at midday, one news tonight, and also current affairs shows Sunday and Fair Go, and the youth-focused service Renews as well. Etu Union's negotiation specialist and spokesperson Michael Wood has been working with staff and has taken time out while out and about to share what he knows about what might or might not unfold. Thank you for being here. What do you think we can expect to see today from TVNZ?
Well, along with our members, be very keenly awaiting the response from TVNZ. It's fair to say, as we have signalled, we believe that the company needs to do a lot more work in terms of sitting down with its staff, genuinely listening to them, respecting the terms of the collective agreement they're a party to, and trying to find a better way through this situation, because effectively gutting the news and current affairs capacity of TVNZ is no sustainable way forward for our national broadcaster.
But today, are we expecting a final decision about the future of the shows like Sunday, Fair Go, and the youth-focused platform Renews? Is that your understanding, that we will get some sort of update about what's going to happen going forward?
Well, yes, the company has indicated that following on from their initial proposal and from staff providing a response to that, that they will be coming back shortly with their confirmed way forward. And as we will then consider that, and consider whether there are any further steps that we might undertake.
Are there any fears that there may be some additional cuts that come out today, sort of a surprise on top of what's proposed, or that some of these shows might be saved?
Well, we would be very surprised if there were additional cuts that were proposed. Were there to be that to be a further proposal from the company, we would expect that there was a new process that was gone through, so that those affected staff and Etu as the union had an opportunity to engage in it. We are hopeful that the company will have listened to some of the feedback and ideas from staff, and that there is a better way forward. We think the best outcome from this would be that TVNZ does retain news and current affairs capacity and looks creatively at ways in which it can grow its revenue base. So that is a possible outcome from this process, and obviously that would be a better one for the staff concerned. But it would be a better one for New Zealand as well, because we're going to be worse off as a country and a democracy if we lose shows like Fair Go and Sunday.
How are staff and have staff been feeling throughout all of this?
These are extraordinarily dedicated people. They work in media not just because it's a job, but because they love the idea that media makes New Zealand a more informed place, a more democratic place, and that the stories of ordinary Kiwis can get told. That's why people work on these shows. So they've been devastated, absolutely devastated, not just at the possible loss of their livelihoods, but at the impact of this on the media landscape in New Zealand. They're very determined and united, and you know they are working together as union members to try and find a better way forward.
We also understand that there could be an announcement on Wednesday tomorrow regarding the future of News Hub. Have you heard any more about that news service's fate at all?
That's also my understanding, is that we're likely to get back a firm direction at News Hub. I don't have any further information as to exactly what that might be. But obviously, it does put the issue into stark relief to have both News Hub and TVNZ in the same week charting a direction here, and potentially, in the worst-case scenario, seeing a massive loss of capacity across our media landscape. And look, that does have real impacts in terms of the ability to tell the stories of New Zealanders, to hold the powerful to account, and to have a vibrant democracy. Yeah, these are things that matter. That's what we've said right the way through this. This isn't just a contractual issue between a union and a company and its staff. This is a public policy issue about whether we have a vibrant and sustainable news and current affairs infrastructure in New Zealand, and all of us should care about that.
Certainly a huge couple of days for the media industry indeed. Etu Union's negotiation specialist and spokesperson, Michael Wood. Kia ora, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
The efforts to tackle the period poverty crisis in Gaza by one Kiwi not-for-profit is still to come. It's some pretty amazing work. So to make sure you never miss stories like that one, chuck Newsable a like and a follow wherever you get your podcasts. Newsable understands Associate Education Minister David Seymour will today reveal his plans to tackle truancy. Seymour's been given the responsibility for the government's attendance action plan, an issue Prime Minister Christopher Luxon put a strong emphasis on during last year's campaign. When we spoke to David Seymour recently, we also asked him about the school wagging problem and about how many kids were currently defined as truant.
Well, that happens at different levels. So basically we say, how many kids are absent 10% of the time or less? So those are your 90% attending, 10% not attending. Those kids are around about 10 to 12% of all. Then you've got kids in the 80 to 90%. Then you've got kids who are less than 70%. Those are the chronically truant. So basically there's about 300,000 kids who are at some level, but which level depends.
And so which threshold then will possibly be getting fined for parents of truant kids?
Well, there won't be any level where we just fine everyone at that level. It'll be case by case. So there's a couple of things. I mean, has there been multiple attempts to get the kid to school? Are the reasons they're not at school reasonable? And, you know, what's the ability to pay? So if you've missed one day of school, we're not going to fine you. If you have been missing school a lot and there's been, you know, attempts to get you there and you are actually trying, then we're probably unlikely to fine you. If you, for example, have, you know, kids not going to school because you basically have no money and they've been working to support the family, probably fining is not really going to help the situation. But there's other things we need to do there. But if you have missed lots of school, lots of people have reached out and said, you got to start doing it, and then you're not listening, and you've got the ability to pay, and you're frankly just not playing ball, then that's when I think a fine might be reasonable, but it's going to be very much on a case-by-case basis.
Are parents solely to blame for kids not attending school?
No, I think the most important thing to recognise about school attendance is that different kids are not attending for different reasons. So, at one end of the spectrum, there'll be kids with the family's got no money and the kid's been sent out to work to buy groceries. On the other hand, there'll be families where there's lots of money and they're just taking them on holiday. There'll be kids who are not going to school because they've had a bad experience at school. And there'll be kids who are not going to school because their parents are frankly negligent and aren't making the effort and aren't stressing to them that they need to be at school. Now, obviously, you know, the answer to getting any particular kid to school is going to depend on what exactly is holding them back. I mean, an example I often use, it was from a charter school some years back. They had an attendance officer who found a student, an intermediate, who wouldn't attend because they were embarrassed, because they didn't have a bra. Now, that's not a really difficult problem to solve, but it could be a very difficult problem to get a student to explain to you that was the problem. So, you know, a good attendance officer could find out information like that and problem solve. There's no point me sitting in the beehive trying to work that out. You need people on the ground who are effective.
How much are these fines going to be? Less or more than 100?
Well, I suspect that if you look at what they're fining across Europe, And just about every Europe country would have fines that would be over 100 New Zealand dollars. But that doesn't mean that we'll go there.
Minister for Regulation and Associate Education Minister, which is David Seymour's capacity for looking after the attendance action plan. David Seymour, appreciate your time.
Not a worry, Imogen. Good to talk.
I think you're conflating a whole bunch of issues.
Don't want to be held to account rising child abuse numbers.
You can manipulate crime statistics.
I promised I wouldn't have a tattoo about gotcha journalism.
Hang into the National Party's attack line there.
But I think it would be a resignation offence if I didn't deliver tax reduction.
Yeah, I'm not worried about it at all.
Nothing iffy in there. That sits with you perfectly fine.
That's what we're focused on.
Whatever happens in politics, the weird, the wonderful, the important, the thought-provoking, we got you. Listen to Tova wherever you get your podcasts.
I'd be very interested to know what you think about fining parents of truant kids. Should it happen? Yes or no? Head to the NZ Stuff Instagram page. There'll be a poll up. Should parents be fined for their kids not attending school? If you'd like to email us your thoughts on the topic as well, you can do that. newsable@stuff.co.nz. As the war in the Middle East rages on, the lack of access to pads, medicine and toilets has in itself become a crisis for Palestinian women as they struggle to manage their periods during the conflict. The UN estimates that nearly 700,000 women and girls in Gaza have menstrual cycles, which they are trying to manage with little privacy and access to necessary products or even clean water. One woman told The Guardian last month that the impending arrival of her menstrual period has become a nightmare and she has to share a bathroom with more than 100 women and children. Q, small, Kiwi not-for-profit Remi, which has won a UK humanitarian grant to supply reusable period underwear to 5,000 women and girls in Gaza. So here to speak more about the effort is founder Emily O'Young, who joins us now. Kia ora.
Kia ora. Thank you for having me.
Can you describe, Emily, just how bad things are on the ground for these women? Not a nice thing for us to hear, but I think we do need to hear it.
Yeah, it is a really difficult circumstance. And as you said, the toilets are limited. Actually, in some camps, it's one toilet per 486 people. People are resorting to using tissues and reusing single-use pads over and over again. And that can lead to infections and health complications. So that's a really hard issue to deal with and manage.
And the grant is amazing, supplying 5,000 pairs of period underwear, but I imagine 5,000 is not enough, right? How much capacity do you have?
Yeah, it's really a drop in the ocean of need. As you mentioned, there's 700,000 women and girls with menstrual cycles at the moment. And so that's really the number that isn't needed. But our capacity is that we are really reaching out to New Zealanders to help us reach another 5,000 women and girls. So $33 would provide four pairs of reusable period underwear and help us double our impact in Gaza.
What first prompted you to think about doing this?
I was working in international development and we were working with Syrian refugees in Lebanon and Jordan. And they were doing amazing work with food aid for people that were trapped by ISIS at the time. And it came up in a report that women were getting infections because of the lack of period products. And so that really probed the question of who is prioritising period products and what kind are even available to women in these circumstances.
So how are you going to get these period products in there?
Yeah, we're really fortunate to work with Oxfam and their local partners on the ground inside and outside of Gaza. And so wherever Oxfam is able to get aid into, Remi period products will be in their Dignity kits.
Nice. And does Remi do any work here on home soil in Aotearoa?
Yeah, we supported the period place last year with the disaster response in Gisborne, sort of funding with the Red Cross. And we're hoping to grow that work this year with Salvation Army as well.
Nice. And Emily, any message to Kiwis who want to help?
Yeah, we really want to encourage people to be part of a really practical solution to help women and girls in Gaza. It's offering manaakitanga and dignity in a really tough situation. And we find a lot of our supporters are men, and we're really grateful for that too. And I think it's because, compassion for this issue is something that we can all have.
Emily O'Young, founder of Remi, not-for-profit. Wonderful stuff you're doing. Thank you for your mahi.
Kia ora. Thank you so much.
So after 4,000-odd years of extinction, a US company reckons it's going to bring back the mammoth. Yep, the big, huge, shaggy Ice Age elephant could be coming to a field near you. That is unconfirmed, that last bit. By the year 2028, according to the founder of the scientific group behind this bonkers idea. In fact, he says he's feeling, quote, pretty good about 2028. Which I would say means mammoths are coming back if this guy reckons it's a done deal. The dodo, huge fan, wouldn't mind that. And the Tasmanian tiger, which I hadn't heard of before, but was a carnivorous marsupial native to Australia, Tasmania and New Guinea, are also on the cards to be brought back to life. Basically, these scientists are using AI to figure out the core genes needed and then engineering them into something that can then be birthed via a different living animal. So they're proposing they could get an Asian elephant to carry and then give birth to a baby mammoth. And then this is the one that gets me. They're going to use chickens for the dodos. I googled this. Dodos, obviously not born 23 kilograms, but they get up to 23 kilograms. Find me a 23 kilogram chicken, please. I beg you. That one doesn't compute to me. By the sounds of things, by the year 2030, we'll be catching air taxis and mammoths are going to be roaming the streets. This doesn't sound like real life. However, if these two things do happen, this just proves anything's possible. I don't know what else could prove that anything is possible. Flying taxis and mammoths by the year 2030. Get out of here. That is Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells, and I wouldn't mind a pet dodo. Just saying.
If you liked listening to this pod, help us make more like this. Visit stuff.co.nz/support.
Hey, Chris.
Yes.
Do you want another very broad question? I've got a very broad question today.
Go on then.
What do you know about sports?
Up the Wazz! Go the Black Caps. And don't forget Premier League football.
Oh, you do love a bit of Premier League footy, don't you? What team is it that you support again?
Oh, the current champions, Manchester City.
I think they're pronounced Arsenal. It's pronounced Arsenal.
But you know what's good about football?
Yeah, what?
They don't regulate soccer height.
I'm sorry, there's a sport that regulates sock height?
Indeed there is, and it's cycling.
That's very strange. Why on earth do they regulate it?
Well, I know, but if you want to find out, you'll have to listen to the Big Stuff Quiz, wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, that's a cliffhanger indeed. The Big Stuff Quiz is brought to you by Melbourne Every Bit Different.